Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, and streaming live on www.freakradio.org, freakradio.org. I'm Ren, and this is Mideast Madness. Titled Rock Sarabi from the album The Music of Arab Americans, a retrospective collection, 1997. Rock Sarabi. Name Karakhan, violin, and oud, piano, sajat, and drum. With Syrian violinist, Naeem Karakhand is a Syrian violinist. Must have arrived in the United States during the second decade of the century, because his earliest recordings with American mainstream labels date to 1915, that's 1915 or before. He continued performing and recording both as a soloist and sideman until well into the 1960s. No time for the rest of that info. We're going to get right into it. This is Mideast Madness with Ren Tawil. And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. a public service announcement, and then an uncommercial. Public service announcement. Keep free radio on the air. Think and think again and again about contributing until you can contribute. As little or as much as you can, as often as you can. We programmers pay our monthly dues for the privilege of broadcasting to you on free radio. You pay the rest. We do not get corporate grants, gifts. In fact, it is our policy not to accept corporate grants and gifts. And I suppose it would help if I told you where to send it. Send your donations, check or money order, or cash if you dare, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, FRSC, Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, that's S-A-N-T-A, second word C-R-U-Z, California, 95061. Keep that pen and paper out. Shortly, I'll be giving you more information that you'll want to copy down, namely the phone numbers for this service. That was the public service announcement. Now for the uncommercial. Given the name of the show, Mideast Madness, you can imagine that someone sooner or later will make a statement like this. There's an organization in the city of Santa Cruz, California, called the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Renowned, also maligned by those who think they understand our message and don't care for it, or who want other people to believe their malignments. A subcommittee of the Resource Center for Nonviolence is the Palestine-Israel Action Committee. And the committee wants people to take note of the fact that there is a product out there at several local metropolitan area Santa Cruz locations. The product is called SodaStream. It has other names like AlcoJet, Genesis, AquaFizz, etc. It is an appliance that makes fizzy, sparkling drinks at home. Don't buy it. Please do not buy SodaStream or any other name that it might come under. Please boycott SodaStream. Why? Harmless little kitchen device. Because it's made by people who are squatting on land that is not theirs, namely Israeli settlers who have been encouraged and supported by the government of Israel, the ultra-conservative Likud government of Israel, to establish settlements on Palestinian land that was taken by force of arms. No, it was not a counterattack. This was a surprise attack in 1967. And contrary to international law, Israel almost immediately began settling civilians on militarily occupied land. The land is still occupied militarily, and the settlements, illegal as they are protected by the Israeli military establishment. They call themselves the Israeli Defense Forces, IDF. I prefer to call them the IOF, Israeli Occupation Forces, because that's what they really are. Defense my arse. And these settlers, as I'm sure they will proudly admit, have established their communities with great security of their own. They are armed. It's not just the army from Israel which is protecting them. It is they protect themselves with their walls and fences. And this infamous so-called security fence/wall, which divides not only post 1967 Israel from the occupied territories, but the wall encompasses, as part of Israel, these settlements. And in the process of doing that, divides the land, divides what's left for the Arabs, the Palestinian Arabs, which often cuts them off from half of their properties, from their fields, from one another, makes certain roads impassable. It divides the communities in what's left of Palestine. It, some refer to this as the Balkanization of Palestine, and some call these little Bantustans, as once existed and perhaps still exists to some degree or another in the former South Africa, former Union of South Africa. But we're talking about Palestine and Israel now. And on one of these illegal Israeli settlements called Ma'ale Adumin, there is an industrial park, Mishor Edomin Industrial Park, where, as I've already explained, appropriate and exploit Palestinian land. They steal Palestinian resources and Palestinian water. They've been doing that for a very long time, actually. So they may maintain their settlements and thrive and produce these exports. SodaStream Fizzy Water Maker is an export, which, as I said, is available at certain locations in Santa Cruz. I don't want to give a bad name to any of these stores, because we're not boycotting the stores, we're boycotting the product. This Christmas season, this holiday season, Hanukkah, Rosh Hashanah, whatever, please do not buy SodaStream. Products made in the Israeli West Bank settlements as I said, use illegally seized Palestinian land, water, and minerals. Exploitation of natural resources in occupied territories is not allowed by international law. And, just as importantly, Palestinians do not receive any profits from those products. Products made in the occupied territories using Palestinian resources. They're not getting anything, not even, no kickbacks, no royalties, nothing. In the meantime, the Palestinian economy is strangling. There are other products, such as Ahava, beauty products that come from the territories. You might want to avoid those products too. Okay. Human rights boycott against SodaStream. Do not buy SodaStream. That is the uncommercial. And it is already 1613 hours. PST. Precious little time. Let's talk about what else, the situation in and immediately outside of Gaza. But before I begin, take that pencil, pen, or pen and paper, copy down these numbers. These are the telephone numbers, so you can talk directly to me live on the air. Here in Santa Cruz County, California, area code 831. 427-3772. That's 427-3772. We have a second line to the studio. You may choose or may have to call that one if you want to talk. Again, area code 831-469-3119. 469-3119. Regardless of your position on the immediate subject matter, what I'm talking about, the general subject area, I want to hear from you. And so does the community, the free radio community. I'll read you the short one first. This is from the Boston Globe. author Sarah Roy. She spells her first name S-A-R-A. Offhand, I would guess that she's Jewish. Not just by her name, but by the fact that she's a senior research scholar at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Harvard University in Massachusetts. She is also the author of Hamas and Civil Society in Gaza, Engaging the Islamist Social Sector. Okay, Boston Globe article entitled "Where is Our Humanity for Gaza?" by Sarah Roy, Globe correspondent, November 23rd, that's last Friday. Between February 2009, just after the Operation Cast Lead onslaught, and August 2012, Israeli attacks in Gaza, averaging 6 per week, they came by aircraft, helicopter gunships, drones, and tanks throughout Gaza. The confiscation of or damage to fishing boats and the detention and arrest of fishermen. Attacks on industrial, farm and food production facilities. And military ground incursions. Let me cut away from the article for just a moment. I want to be clear about this. Ms. Roy is talking about events not during the last major Israeli military action against Gaza. She's talking about what's happened since February 2009, just after the end of Operation Cast Lead. But since then, but before August of 2012, preceding this, the latest Israeli invasion by air, lovers of Israel, supporters of Israel, love to say that their military has exercised great restraint. So no one should blame them for these two major attacks in 4 years. Well, what Ms. Roy is saying is that between the wars, there are Israeli attacks in Gaza averaging six per week by aircraft, helicopter, gunships, drones, and tanks throughout Gaza. I've been aware of this also since 2008, since my visit there. They do this a lot, all the time, almost entirely without impunity, breaking ceasefires, and no one in America seems to hear about it. It gets virtually no press play. All right, back to the article from the Boston Globe. The current crisis is framed in terms devoid of any real context. The issue goes far beyond which side precipitated the terrible violence that has killed innocents on both sides. The issue, largely forgotten, is one of continued occupation and blockade, a grossly asymmetrical conflict that has deliberately and systematically disabled Gaza's economy and people. The Gaza Strip is now in its 46th year of occupation, 22nd year of closure, and 6th year of intensified closure. The resulting normalization of the occupation assumes a dangerous form in the Gaza Strip whose status as an occupied territory has ceased to matter in the West. The attention has shifted after Hamas' 2006 electoral victory and 2007 takeover of the territory to Gaza's containment and punishment, rendering illegitimate any notion of human rights or freedom for Palestinians. And of course, she's talking about Gaza's containment by Israel, not Hamas. And Hamas's containment, and Gaza's and Hamas's punishment by Israel. returning. The Israeli government has referred to its siege policy as a form of, quote, economic warfare. In a November 2008 cable from the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv, released by WikiLeaks, U.S. officials wrote, quote, as part of their overall embargo plan against Gaza, Israeli officials have confirmed on multiple occasions that they intend to keep the Gazan economy on the brink of collapse without quite pushing it over the edge, end quote. With the aim of having Gaza's economy, quote, functioning at the lowest level possible, consistent with avoiding a humanitarian crisis, end quote. This was achieved through an Israeli-imposed blockade that ended all normal trade. And once again, Ms. Roy is quoting U.S. Embassy officials, U.S. Embassy in Israel, in Tel Aviv, released by WikiLeaks, returning. The result has been high and persistent unemployment, which stood near 30% by June 2012, according to the International Monetary Fund. Approximately 39% of Gaza's people lived below the poverty line in 2011. The figure would be far greater without donor aid. Gaza's economic decline is seen in the near collapse of its agricultural sector. One factor is the destruction of around 7,800 acres of agricultural land during Cast Lead. Consequently, approximately one-third of Gaza's total arable land is out of production. One-third. Furthermore, Israeli-imposed buffer zones, areas of restricted access, now absorb nearly 14% of Gaza's total land and at least 48% of total arable land. Those are Israeli-imposed buffer zones, restricted to Palestinians. Similarly, the sea buffer zone covers 85% of the maritime area promised to Palestinians in the Oslo Accords, reducing 20 nautical miles to 3 nautical miles, where waters are fouled by sewage flows in excess of 23 million gallons daily. Sewage flows, folks. Another critical constraint is water. Gaza's aquifer has been ruined by prolonged overpumping and sewage and containment infiltration. I will add to that, Ren speaking here, that going way, way back, Gaza's aquifer has been nearly emptied by Israelis right on the border, right outside the Gazan border, all around the border area, other than the area of Egypt, of course, who drill at an angle so they can get underneath Gaza's land and pump the water out of those aquifers. Found out about that back in 2007. Returning to article. Almost all of Gaza's municipal wells used for drinking water are seriously polluted. Due to the breakdown of Gaza's sanitation infrastructure, particularly after 2008, this infiltration has led to elevated levels of nitrates and chlorides in the groundwater and soil, far above World Health Organization safety levels, posing a dangerous health risk to humans and livestock. Israel's blockade policy restricts the entry of materials needed to repair, maintain, and upgrade Gaza's sewage and wastewater treatment infrastructure. The organization Save the Children reported in 2011, just last year, that Israeli airstrikes destroyed water and sanitation infrastructure valued at $1.3 million. The impact on health is clear. Just under 10% of Gazan children under the age of 5 suffered from chronic malnutrition in 2010. According to Save the Children, quote, diseases of poverty and conflict combined with a degenerating health care system are claiming growing numbers of Gaza's children, end quote. Birth defects, congenital anomalies, and cancer cases are reportedly rising. This is likely due to environmental contamination, including the possible use of toxic weaponry during cast lead. The current military assault will undoubtedly worsen environmental conditions. Yet, the U.S. government will probably cut funding to the Palestinians if they pursue United Nations observer membership. Political differences aside, where is our humanity? End of article, authored again by Sarah Roy, senior research scholar at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Harvard, and author of the book Hamas and Civil Society in Gaza, Engaging the Islamist Social Sector. Call me at area code 831-427-3772. The lines are open. They're wide open, as they notoriously are on free radio broadcasting here in Santa Cruz. But you're welcome to call me. I'd appreciate getting a better idea of who all is listening or how many all is listening. By the way, the second line to the studio is 469-3119. I was just checking the Shoutcast administrator to see how many of you out there are listening online, so far as the Shoutcast program can discern. There's one listener. But there is an impossible-to-tally number of those who live within the range of our 101.3 FM frequency, basically synonymous with the boundaries of the city of Santa Cruz, who may be listening. Who knows how many? If you're listening out there by radio or by internet, on your computer, please give me a call. 427-3772 or 469-3119. And the show is roughly 50% over. It's 4:28 p.m. Okay, more Gaza stuff. This is a longer article. I'll push through it. This one dated November 25. That was yesterday, Sunday. November 25. Gaza Redux Analysis. Which was authored by, I'm having a hard time finding his name now. Oh, that's right. There's a couple of articles here. I get 6 pages to plow through. Gaza Redux Analysis. Mazin Kumsieh, PhD, professor at Bethlehem University. Mazin Kumsieh. I get my resource materials from a variety of resources and a variety of individuals. Here we go. Analysis of conflicts and destruction should not be done in the heat of the moment when emotions are high. In wars, everybody loses, but to variable degrees. But certain parties can claim achieving certain goals they set for themselves. Taking stock of the attack on Gaza, the players in this game come out differently, civilians, Hamas, Fatah, the Israeli government, the U.S., etc. And it is worth reflecting. Redux analysis. The civilian population, as in all modern wars, most of the casualties are civilians. 162 Palestinians and 5 Israelis were killed during the Israeli attack, and 1 Palestinian killed after the ceasefire was declared. This includes 30 Palestinian children. Now, that, folks, that's 30 children alone out of the 162 Palestinians killed. 30 children, and Israel suffered a loss of a total of 5 individuals. Returning to article, over 1,000 Palestinians were injured, and many will have to live with lifelong injuries. The damage in Gaza to infrastructure and homes is tremendous. Gaza has not even recovered from the last attack 4 years ago, Operation Cast Lead, remember? Donors promised to rebuild but never did. In the West Bank, several Palestinians demonstrating in solidarity with Gaza were killed and many injured, and hundreds imprisoned by the Israeli occupation forces. And Gaza remains the largest prison on earth, this infamous open-air prison, proverbial open-air prison. The last election war in Israel in 2008-2009 cost 1,400 Palestinian lives and 13 Israelis. The number of injured is 10 times more and is also skewed 100-1 Palestinian to Israeli injuries. Let me explain here. As Mr. Kumsie writes, the last election war, he's calling it the election war in Israel, which was Operation Cast Lead. He uses the term election because there were elections in this democratic state of Israel, as it is touted to be. And to keep the Likud party in power, Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, affectionately known as Bibi, apparently decided to launch an attack. There are also elections very soon in Israel. Lo and behold, 4 years later, another massive deadly attack from Israel. Returning to article. The damaged structures, including infrastructure, is not even comparable. The damaged structures, including infrastructure, is not even comparable. Israeli occupation forces bombed mosques, residential buildings, electricity grids, media offices, folks, and government offices in Gaza, while damage and reprisal attacks in Israel was minimal. Depleted uranium and other weapons also continue to increase cancers among civilians. Admittedly, that may also be uranium that may or may not have been used in Hamas's missiles. I don't know. I really do not know. Let's talk about Hamas now. Let's reflect on the results of this last war on Hamas, which is the name of the political party in control of Gaza, Palestinian Gaza. The recent conflict started when Israel assassinated a moderate military leader who was holding other factions. He was holding other factions to previous ceasefire understandings. The goal was electoral and for internal preparedness against a possible conflict with Iran and for internal preparedness against a possible conflict with Iran. Israel's own estimates is that the stockpile of rockets was 12,000 to 14,000 and that Hamas used only 10%, which they will replenish. Most analysis predict more money and weapons coming to Hamas since it gained much politically among Palestinians and among others. The philosophy of Hamas includes things like, quote, what was taken by force can only be reclaimed by force, and that, quote, resistance works. The ideology was certainly bolstered in the minds of many people. But Hamas needs to show evidence of a coherent strategy to achieve its own goals beyond slogans and celebration of withstanding and resisting Israeli terror. Let's reflect upon Mohammed Abbas, who is the president of the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah, in the West Bank. Abbas used to describe rockets fired from Gaza as stupid and ineffective. Hillary Clinton visited to bolster the PA, Palestinian Authority, but the U.S. position backing Israeli massacres went further, meant further weakening. The Oslo Accords became a distant memory and the PA largely irrelevant. The long-touted Palestinian reconciliation was talked about, but few believe leaderships of Hamas or Fatah are genuinely seeking reconciliation. The increased emphasis on the bid for admission to the United Nations as a non-member state is done without explanations about the exact language that is already being negotiated with the U.S./Israel to emasculate it from any real meaning. I'm going to read those again, just at least so I can understand them. The long-touted Palestinian reconciliation and I think they're largely talking about reconciliation between Fatah, the ruling party in the West Bank, and Hamas, the rulers of Gaza. Long-touted Palestinian reconciliation was talked about, but few believe leaderships of Hamas or Fatah are genuinely seeking reconciliation. The increased emphasis on the bid for admission to the United Nations as a non-member state is done without explanations about the exact language that is already being negotiated with the United States and Israel to emasculate it from any real meaning. There are also side arguments being worked out to have a PA promise not to bring Israel before international courts. Losing face is not something that men, including Arab men, take easily. Abbas and his colleagues in Fatah, who benefited in the past from Oslo, find it harder to climb down. But Gaza formed a joint operation room with all resistance fighters . Perhaps the decent people in Fatah who join the resistance will provide the needed bridge. Perhaps also people like jailed Fatah leader Marwan Barghouti can help. He called for ending the useless negotiations and security coordination with Israel. Perhaps with help of Dr. Nabil Shath, Barghouti can also can play a role in allowing for a face-saving exit strategy from the muddy sinkhole of Oslo. A reminder again, our phone numbers are 831-427-3772 or 469-3119. Don't be shy about interrupting me. Don't be afraid to call in. Make this show more colorful and interesting. Now, reflections on Egypt. Egypt, after the revolution, put itself squarely as a major player in Middle East politics and began to shed its Mubarak-era image, if not substance, of being a puppet of the U.S. government. The Egyptian government, led by President Morsi, brokered the ceasefire deal and managed to show diplomatic and maneuvering skills that gained it respect. But The main audience was the Egyptian street. In the announcement right after the ceasefire deal was of consolidating power for Morsi. See, that last thing is what we're hearing in the U.S. media. His power grab, Egyptian power grab by an Islamist president. Continuing. Demonstrations were held in Egypt complaining about the dictatorial powers. Using Palestine to strengthen internal control is a very old strategy used by many Arab leaders. What Egypt does about the gas fields off of Gaza shore and about allowing arming of the resistance is a more practical barometer of any real change in Egypt. The three architects of this war, Ehud Barak, former prime minister, and current defense minister, who just announced yesterday he'll be leaving that post soon. Barak, Netanyahu, current prime minister, and Lieberman. I believe that's Avigdor Lieberman. Held a press conference and were grim and unsmiling as they announced that they, quote, achieved their goals. And they will not hesitate to hit Gaza again, quote, if rockets resumed. It seems even Israelis did not buy this. But I think it is too simplistic to describe Israel as having, quote, lost this war, as some pundits are saying. The publicly declared goals from this attack on Gaza are actually different from privately held goals. The public goal to end the, quote, threat to the south, hence the name Pillar of Defense, which is the name Israel has given to this attack, is actually not the real goal. In any case, that goal failed since Hamas came out stronger from this. But there are other undeclared goals. One, bolstering election chances in Israel. Two, testing the weakest chain of the forces of resistance, Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, and Iran. And three, testing the Israeli defense preparedness mechanisms. A massive and real drill, including the Iron Dome missile defense system to prepare for wider conflicts to come with Hezbollah and Iran. In the first, polls will soon show if the three benefited politically for the upcoming election. To the second goal, testing the weakest chain of the forces of resistance, the tested subject proved stronger than expected by Israel. The tested subject proved stronger than expected by Israel. The use of longer-range Fajr, that's F-A-J-R, Fajr 5, shocked many Israelis, especially when these rockets reached Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. The third goal had mixed results, but now Israel will spend a few weeks acquiring more Iron Dome batteries and organizing their warning system in a better way. It augurs poorly for Israel since they spend $750 million for a conflict with imprisoned Gaza Palestinians. A fourth goal may have been to test when the Obama administration, what the Obama administration does in its second term in office. Some analysts predicted that Obama will be free in his second term in office to fulfill some of what he said in his Cairo speech nearly 4 years ago. But the evidence showed he is still subservient to AIPAC, that is, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and the Washington lobby in Washington. And the Israel lobby in Washington. I'll read that sentence again because I think it's important. But the evidence showed that he, President Obama, is still subservient to AIPAC and the Israel lobby in Washington. Both in Israel and the U.S., there is a hope that toppling the Syrian regime, if done soon, may help in the war on the remaining axis, Hezbollah and Iran. Others believe the issue of Iran can't wait. In fact, before the ink was dry on ceasefire agreement, Israeli papers were reporting that Iran is moving dirt in one location in ways that suggest they are hiding nuclear activity. It's 4:45, folks. Let's reflect upon Turkey's involvement. Turkey had a hand in moving towards a Gaza settlement. If the siege on Gaza is indeed reduced and stipulated in the ceasefire deal in significant ways, this will remove one of the three conditions laid down by Ankara. Ankara is Turkey's capital, on resumption of normal, friendly relations with Israel. Overall, Turkey is interested in getting NATO support for its defense capability, including Patriot missiles, and cares more about its own interests than about the interests of people in Gaza. Turkey would be satisfied with new, calmer arrangements in Gaza, even if it ends up profiting Israel. And, of course, let's reflect upon Iran, the country of Iran. Hamas did acknowledge Iranian help in developing its defense capabilities. Iran said that Arab and Islamic countries should now see the value of helping the Palestinians and Lebanese defend themselves against U.S.-Israeli aggression and hegemony. If the ceasefire holds, and if Israel improved its Iron Dome abilities with U.S. support, and if Netanyahu Lieberman succeed in being elected to form the next government, then it is very likely that Israel will be freer to attack Iran. The Israeli right-wing politicians are trying to get their house in order and to ensure U.S. support to proceed to create more wars. They already started six wars in the Middle East with similar patterns, the Israelis have. Iran is obviously studying developments and lessons to deal with the contingencies. And the U.S., USA. U.S. foreign policy is simply domestic policy. U.S. foreign policy is simply domestic policy, as Henry Kissinger once said. Absent Muslim American and Arab American effective lobbies, the Zionist lobby dictate U.S. policy, according to Professor Kumsier here. This may be changing as U.S. elites realize that unconditional support of Israel has persistently weakened the United States economically, politically, and morally. More and more U.S. citizens are connecting the dots between the frail and unsustainable economy of the U.S. and its domestically generated, and then he puts in parentheses, anti-American foreign policy in support of apartheid and repression. People increasingly see that the Israeli push to get the U.S. into a war on Iraq cost thousands of American lives and nearly $3 trillion. Hopefully they will see the repercussions of the Israeli push for conflict with Iran before it is too late. And perhaps the biggest loser was the truth. Israel's massive propaganda effort paid off as Western media showed Israel, quote, defending itself and failed to report reality. There was no organized counter-efforts to tell the real story or to pressure Western media, which dominate world media, to move to balanced reporting. Social media and the electronic transfer of information helped a little by showing the extent of suffering and damage in Gaza, but even here, the effort could have been far better from the millions who sympathized with Gaza, but did little to help get the truth out. We, as people of conscience, need to do much better at challenging journalism that is biased, shoddy, and in some cases criminally complicit. I'm going to read that again because I think it's important. We, as people of conscience, need to do much better at challenging journalism that is biased, shoddy, and in some cases criminally complicit. Even if you won't see any prosecutions coming out of that complicity. The impact of the latest attack also needs to be analyzed in terms of Israeli plans to cut off Gaza from the Palestinian equation and dump it southward, minus its rich gas fields offshore, which Israel still controls, hence preventing fishermen from getting to fish, lest they disturb the lucrative potential $1 trillion in development. I, Ren Tawil, will add to that, or wish to emphasize, that those oil fields lie in internationally recognized Gazan-Palestinian waters. They're not international waters. They're within Gazan-acknowledged waters. Returning to the article. Joining impoverished Gaza with Egypt, while keeping the natural resources, joining impoverished Gaza with Egypt while keeping the natural resources would relieve a huge demographic problem for colonial Israel, which is to say 1.6 million Palestinians live in Gaza, including 1 million refugees from previous wars, etc. The danger of, quote, segregating Gaza and making some long-term arrangement for it with the help of Egypt would free Israel to focus on building settlements in the West Bank, developing gas fields off Gaza's shoreline, off the shoreline but within Gazan waters boundary, Judaizing Jerusalem, and tightening control of the West Bank Palestinians living in shrinking ghettos slash people warehouses. These ghettos can be either declared a state, archipelago state, that would be transportational contiguous via tunnels, or annexed to Jordan, which already has 3.5+ million Palestinians. Both Hamas and Israel propagated the myth that there are two sides to the issue in occupied Palestine, and that it is a religious conflict. But you cannot equate occupier with occupied, colonizer with colonized. Israel is an advanced country with the fifth or sixth strongest army on Earth. That's the fifth or sixth strongest army on Earth. Or, as one Israeli academic put it, an army which has a country. Palestinians are occupied, colonized people. Two-thirds of us are refugees or displaced people. Further, the struggle here is not between Israelis and Palestinians, or worse, between Jews and Muslims, but a struggle between those who support apartheid of all religions and backgrounds and those who oppose it of all religions and backgrounds. Mazin Kumsieh finishes his article thusly. Many of us believe this is the time to push forward our human and humane vision of one democratic state in historic Palestine. This pluralistic state would solve once and for all the historic injustice that afflicted the Palestinian people with the advent of Zionism. It would lead to a durable peace. The only available alternative is now seen to be a balance of terror for years to come, and this is not appealing to anyone except those who mistakenly think it could allow them to form or retain their religious state. But history shows that Palestine was always multi-ethnic and multi-religious and always rejected, becoming a monolithic society. Article entitled Gaza Redux Analysis that came out yesterday, written by Mazin Kumsi, a PhD professor at Bethlehem University, who may be contacted at Kumsi, that's Kumsiyeh.org. Folks, it's time for me to go. Perhaps I'll get to the rest of this next week. This is Mideast Madness coming to you live every Monday at 4 p.m., 1600 hours Pacific Standard Time. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at 101.3 FM, and streaming live at freakradio.org. Keep those donations coming in to FRSC, Post Office Box 7811. Santa Cruz, two words, California 95061. Please go to the website if you do not intend to listen. We need a new studio near downtown with 24 access. No more than $300 a month. We want to keep this service up and coming out to you. Thanks again for listening. This is Ren Tawil. Goodbye until next Monday.
Ahora se encuentran.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, November 26, 2012. Israel continued to attack Gaza in violation of last week's truce deal, and in the West Bank, a date has been set to open the grave of late Palestinian President Yasser Arafat. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned.